Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 2nd of May. This hour of the program, we talk about the political and military relationships between Afghanistan and the United States, Pakistan and the United States, Afghanistan and Pakistan, and, of course, our special coverage continuing of the death of Osama bin Laden. We have two guests with us this next hour of the program. Professor Christine Fair will join us, assistant professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. She served as a senior political scientist with the RAND Corporation as well, and a political officer to the UN assistance mission to Afghanistan in Kabul, and as a senior research associate in the Center for Conflict Analysis and Prevention. She is a senior fellow with the Counterterrorism Center at West Point. She, her resume says, can cause trouble in multiple languages. And I believe she was in Pakistan fairly recently working with the United Nations. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we look at the foreign relations aspect of this and the question of our somewhat troublesome relationship with Pakistan and where we go from here. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Professor Christine Fair, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much. Oh, just by way of clarification, I was not in Pakistan with the UN. I was there doing other stuff.
Oh, okay.
part of my Georgetown duties. Thank you.
Okay. So when you heard the news yesterday, what were your thoughts? People who know a whole lot about this region, what was going through your mind?
Honestly, I'm just as stunned as everyone else.
Are you?
Yeah. I don't think anyone saw this coming. That's for sure. What is, of course, disturbing is, you know, some of the information that's coming out and where he was eventually found and killed, Abbottabad. You know, it shouldn't be surprising, right? Most of the al-Qaeda operatives have been hiding in plain sight and captured in Pakistan's various cities. But, you know, this is sort of it's like Rawalpindi light in the sense that there are so many, you know, the Pakistan Military Academy is there. There's a lot of retired and serving military personnel. It really does raise a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. And it was sort of hard when you look at it and you think about how close it was to Islamabad and how huge this structure was. I mean, everybody would have to look at it and say, people knew what was going on here. How could you not?
Well, I mean, like I said, I really don't want to speculate on what was known or what wasn't known. You know, Pakistan, it's a complicated entity. I mean, there was on Al Jazeera English some interviews with residents of the area in which the home was located, and they did think the house was strange. Pakistan people tend to be very friendly, and they're always in your business. They're always into everyone's business. And so residents did say it was quite weird that they didn't remotely participate in the social life of the locality, because that is kind of strange. But, you know, they didn't seem to pursue it. Now, look, there's probably good reason. I mean, there is a lot of militant training camps in the area. There are a lot of bad guys in the area. So, you know, if you were prudent, you wouldn't necessarily get too curious about suspicious stuff living in your neighborhood. And that's why a lot of these guys have for so long been able to hide in plain sight, is that though they may generate some curiosity, people are not typically so curious, so they want to get themselves into trouble.
Right.
So, but like I said, the locality raised a lot of questions. It's very near the Pakistan Military Academy. The place is crawling with serving and retired Army personnel. In the absence of more information, they either look incompetent that this was going on in such a secured area. Checkpoints are all over the place, or they look complicit. And so I think this is going to, again, the absence of information that demonstrates a clear and positive role of the Pakistanis, this is probably going to add more tension to our already fraught relations.
Well, let's talk about all the bad guys in this neighborhood and in other neighborhoods along that border and what we do know about the arrangements that the Pakistani government has had to make to keep those people from turning on the Pakistani government.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well,
what arrangements?
What kinds of, you know, arrangements have been made? We're going to look askance at the activities. We're going to...
Well, I mean, Pakistan has different relationships with different kinds of militant groups. So, for example, an organization like Lashkar-e-Taiba has very active ties with the ISI, which is Pakistan's intelligence agency, and Lashkar-e-Taiba is the group that did the Mumbai 2008 attack. Whereas other groups, Pakistan has really turned against in some measure, but only after attempts at reconciling with them have failed. So there's a range of groups operating in Pakistan that have a range of ties with the ISI.
Let's talk about the significance of this death to Al-Qaeda and how many completely different groups there are than the one that Osama bin Laden was the leader of. Al Jazeera today is saying that bin Laden's death, while symbolically significant, may mean little for Al-Qaeda's capabilities. Would you agree with that? And can you talk about what Al-Qaeda is now, 10 years after September 11?
Well, look, I mean, this is a subject of a lot of debate. You have really smart people like Bruce Hoffman who argue that bin Laden was pivotal to the organization. And I'm sure he would concede, he's also my boss, that the loss of bin Laden does not mean the obituary for Al-Qaeda. And then you had other people like Mark Sageman that focused upon this notion of leaderless jihad, focusing more on the fact that you have these networks of terrorist groups and terrorist cells throughout the world that are inspired by Al-Qaeda, but don't necessarily take direction directly from Al-Qaeda. And, of course, the reality is it involves both. And I think it really is too early to speculate about what the effects are going to be on Al-Qaeda's operational capabilities. Al-Zawahiri was sort of the planner for some time. He's likely to take over a successor. But remember, over the course of the last 10 years, they've really expanded their geographical footprint. They're ensconced in Yemen. They're in Somalia. And the other thing is that in recent years, there have been a lot more Americans joining Al-Qaeda. And so the organization has changed quite a bit. Now, they haven't been able to execute a big, spectacular attack since September 11th in the first instance, probably because of the pressure that they've been under from U.S. counterterrorism efforts. And that, so their modus operandi has really been to do bloody attacks that are not spectacular, but that are nonetheless horrific. And so I would suspect that those capabilities of doing those kinds of operations remain very much intact.
Mm-hmm. And do you imagine that they feel more likely today to do more of those kinds of attacks? I'm wondering about alert levels, about retaliation.
Well, I mean, we would be utterly foolish if we didn't think that that was not going to be in the offing. I mean, I'm supposed to leave for Pakistan tomorrow.
Oh, my.
So I'm just sort of wondering what's going to happen.
Are you going to go?
Because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Are you going to go?
I love going to Pakistan. I'm a proponent of U.S.-Pakistan relations. I think it's one of the most important countries that we engage. And I think it's important that Americans have a relationship with Pakistanis. I've been going to the place since 1991. I speak Urdu. If the trip gets canceled, it's not because of my call. I mean, I think it's important that we go and that we engage Pakistanis, especially now, because what people are going to be suspecting is now that bin Laden is captured, most people are going to suspect that the Americans are going to pull out of the region. I think it's really important that we demonstrate that we're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm. What did you make of the way the president worded the cooperation from the Pakistanis and the lack of cooperation? It was very well
ambiguous.
Chosen. It wasn't it?
Yeah.
What was he saying?
Well, the president more so than anyone else is sensitive to the situation of the Pakistanis. You don't want to humiliate them. The president was right. We've had a lot of important captures in Al-Qaeda because of Pakistani cooperation. This is true even though Pakistan continues to support other terrorist groups that we would like to disappear. So, I mean, the president is wisely mindful of the fact that you don't want to humiliate the Pakistanis. In the absence of other information, like I said, they either look incompetent that this guy was hiding in plain sight in a highly militarized city, or they look complicit. And I think the president was right to try and provide some semblance of a fig leaf for Pakistan, but also to deflect some of the inevitable criticism about whether Pakistan is an ally deserving of the assistance that the Americans are giving them, or a foe, which requires a different set of punitive measures. So I think the president was right to couch this in the language that he did.
What do you think they are?
I think they are an important country. I think that the United States and Pakistan have really important divergence in strategic interests. In our countries that we see as our allies, principally India, is Pakistan's enemy. The groups that Pakistan embraces as allies we see as our enemies. So it's very difficult to have a strategic relationship with a country when your strategic interests diverge, right? That being said, we need each other for really important, albeit different, reasons. I mean, we really do need Pakistan. Pakistan is a sort of a linchpin in our understanding the threats that emanate from both Pakistan-based terrorism, but then obviously there's the nuclear issue. There's the active security competition with India that always has the potential to escalate. And Pakistan needs us because it's fiscally deprived. It does face a fast-growing enemy, which is India. And of course, we would love to arm that fast-growing enemy, but that hasn't worked out. So we're kind of locked in this deadly embrace. We need each other. We don't like the fact that we need each other, but ultimately we do.
Mm-hmm. And finally, tell me a little more about drone attacks. We've heard that those have strained the U.S.-Pakistani relationship. How strained is it? How substantial have those been, killing of civilians in that area?
Well, that actually is a load of nonsense dipped in a vat of silliness. The drones were being operated out of Pakistani soil with Pakistani complicity. But this has been the deal with Pakistan. We'll conduct the drone strikes. They will complain about it. And this happens in a whole range of activities. And they primarily do it to sort of create a strategic space where they can then say, well, there's a limit to what we can do because our people dislike you so much. And this has been the deal from the get-go with these drone strikes. They simply don't kill the civilians as charged, especially in recent years. So some of the more sanguinary attacks that killed a lot of civilians, when, like, for example, the January 2006 attack at Damodola, that wasn't a drone. That was a conventional airstrike with an F-16.
I know that you have a very busy day, and I wish you the best of luck going to Pakistan tomorrow.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, this is a great day to be an American, but the fight's really not over.
Thank you. Professor Christine Fair, assistant professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies, Georgetown University in Washington, on her way, I didn't know this, to Pakistan tomorrow. She's been there many times. We have another guest coming up in a few minutes. We thought we would use this time. I know there are many of you who want to talk about what happened yesterday when the president made the announcement that we had killed Osama bin Laden. So we're just going to go through a lot of phone calls, and we'll continue taking phone calls, but this is your time to call in before we speak with our next guest, who is Pakistani, a native of Pakistan. We'll be speaking next with the author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. He's the director of the South Asia Center, Atlantic Council of the United States. But we have time to just listen to you, and we'll do that momentarily. 800-486-8655 is the number. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now. Tom in Stevens Point. Hi.
Morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Tom.
I would hope that this morning there's some reevaluation at Wisconsin Public Radio as to how you break into regular programming for important news. I was driving across the state last night, and thankfully there were commercial stations that interrupted their regular programming for, like, ongoing ABC News coverage, CBS News, etc. But to my dismay, Wisconsin Public Radio stayed with old-time radio and classical music. I'm sure NPR, or I would suspect that NPR provided live coverage. It wasn't until 11 o'clock that you all went to BBC, and by then the president's speech was done, and we all knew the story.
Yeah, I don't know if NPR went to live coverage. I was watching, actually, WGN. It has early news while I was walking on the treadmill, and they kept saying, the president will be on at 9:30. It's about national security. This is very unusual. And then I switched to other channels. But I don't know. We'll find out. We'll call and find out.
Well, it's very unfortunate.
I know. You count on us. But, you know, we're trying to give you as much as we can today. So I understand. We should have been in on We should have been on the breaking news. But
sure, exactly.
Okay,
okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, criticism justified. I don't know if NPR provided coverage or not, but, of course, they should have. All right. Daryl in Couderay. Hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Yeah, I know the president said that he's dead, but I really question it because, you know, they said that they buried his or took his body, put it in the ocean because, you know, that's Muslim practice to be born within 24 hours of your death. But, I mean, why are we showing this guy any kind of consideration? You know, I mean, it seems like, you know, his body, you know, they could have stuffed it and put it in the Smithsonian Institute and got $100 for everybody that stuck a pin in it.
All right. Well, thanks very much for your comments, Daryl.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Goodbye. We go to Cody in Oshkosh. Hi, Cody.
Hi. Number one, I completely disagree with the last caller, but my point is your first guest commented that our U.S. policy should go to every area of the world that's in our interest. Well, if Afghanistan is included, I mean, there's practically nowhere that isn't, and we're just propping up a global capitalist, you know, system, and it's a huge subsidy to them is all it is, and we're spending trillions of dollars that we can't afford. Thank you.
All right, Cody, thanks for the call. We're taking a few calls before our next guest is joining us, 800-486-8655. And we're just asking you to respond to what you think of the news that Osama bin Laden is dead. Bud in Wausau, hi.
Hello?
Yeah, Bud, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I get the Time magazine, and about 6 months ago, an article regarding Afghanistan showing one of our military standing next to one of the Afghan farmers. 52% of their gross national product is poppies that they grow, and our military is over there protecting these poppy fields. The harvest goes to our enemy, and they refine it into heroin, and sell it throughout North America and Europe, and that's what's financing this war, their end of it, against our military. So what that Afghanistan war is doing in the last 12 years is providing heroin around the world and serving to bankrupt our country. I've got a grandson that's a teacher. Every branch of our government is struggling for finances in this country, and our Social Security is being questioned as to how they can modify it to continue all this expense of this silly war that's producing heroin around the world.
All right, so do you think that the death of Osama bin Laden will change U.S. policy in Afghanistan, sir?
In the Second World War.
All right, well, we need to move on. Thank you very much for your comments. Chris in Madison. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I'm calling. I echo some of the comments made a couple calls ago. I'm really skeptical of this, that, you know, we're told that this person that has been searched for 10 years has somehow been found and shot. We're not shown any real proof.
Well, you will be shown proof. I'm sure of that.
You're sure we'll be shown proof?
Yeah, I don't think they could have done this without a picture or some kind of proof that he's dead. Yes.
They're not really seem to be very forthcoming with that.
Well, they probably
the whole idea that they've dumped his body in the ocean just seems like.
So you think he isn't dead? Is that what you're saying?
I think he died in December of 2001. Which we have a lot of different, you know, eyewitness accounts that attended a funeral.
Yeah, I need you show me the proof on that, Chris. Let's go to Jim in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. Well, I think that this will serve as kind of a dog and pony show thing, but I think the basic policy will go on unabated, and the basic policy is that the Republicans and the centrist Democrats tend to intervene in a lot of countries around the world to exploit them for the purposes of our corporate gain. And I think, you know, what we're engaged in is a global whack-a-mole. And yes, the government is going to take your money for something. But the real issue is, what is the government going to take your money for to spend? Is it going to be on needless wars and tax breaks for the rich? Or is it going to be for the needs of the people at home? And I think that's the thing people got to focus on for the long term.
And what did you think of the news yesterday?
Well, there was certainly some satisfaction in it, but again, I don't think it ultimately in the long run. I think the policy continues unabated, and that I have problems with.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
We are going to play. The Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, had a press conference this morning in which she talked about a continuing threat and our desire to continue to work as we have to with Afghanistan and Pakistan. So we will listen to her comments. And joining us in just a little while, Shujaat Nawaz, director of the South Asia Center, the Atlantic Council of the United States, author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. He is a native of Pakistan. So right now, the comments from Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
Because even as we mark this milestone, we should not forget that the battle to stop al-Qaeda and its syndicate of terror will not end with the death of bin Laden. Indeed, we must take this opportunity to renew our resolve and redouble our efforts. In Afghanistan, we will continue taking the fight to al-Qaeda and their Taliban allies, while working to support the Afghan people as they build a stronger government and begin to take responsibility for their own security. We are implementing the strategy for transition approved by NATO at the summit in Lisbon, and we are supporting an Afghan-led political process that seeks to isolate al-Qaeda and end the insurgency. Our message to the Taliban remains the same, but today it may have even greater resonance. You cannot wait us out. You cannot defeat us, but you can make the choice to abandon al-Qaeda and participate in a peaceful political process. In Pakistan, we are committed to supporting the people and government as they defend their own democracy from violent extremism.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at a press conference this morning. I found this piece of news interesting. It's from the BBC. You wonder how news is disseminated. An IT consultant who was living in Abbottabad unknowingly tweeted details of the U.S.-led operation as it happened. He wrote, Sohaib Athar wrote that a helicopter was hovering overhead shortly before the assault began and said that it might not be a Pakistani aircraft. He became aware of the significance of his tweets after President Obama announced details of bin Laden's death. His posting came around 1 a.m. local time, and he wrote, "Helicopter hovering above Abbottabad at 1 a.m. is a rare event." Soon after, he reported the sound of an explosion, now known to have been U.S. forces blowing up their damaged helicopter, a huge window shaking, bang, here in Abbottabad. "I hope it's not the start of something nasty." He was also drawing on information from friends in the local area who were online. The few people online at the time of the night were saying that one of the copters was not Pakistani. People are saying it was not a technical fault and it was shot down. "I heard it circle 3 to 4 times above. Sounded purposeful." U.S. officials stated that the raid took less than 40 minutes. He said there was still military presence in the area 2 hours later. He described himself as an IT consultant taking a break from the rat race by hiding in the mountains with his laptops. 800-486-8655 is our number, and our guest will be joining us momentarily. He was called into an emergency meeting, so he will be calling us as soon as he is able to. We're interested in his perspective. Shujaat Nawaz, let me just give you his bio so that I don't have to do that when he calls in. A native of Pakistan, a political and strategic analyst writing for leading newspapers and the Huffington Post. He is the author of a book about Pakistan, and he will be joining us as soon as he is able to leave his meeting. We're particularly interested, and the more that we talk this morning, the more we're wondering about why it is Pakistan was reluctant to give information. It would appear that that's the case, because this is this huge compound very close to the center of government, and a huge compound that's in a part of Pakistan where there are a lot of military leaders and installations, and it's, it stretches the imagination to believe that the government didn't know what was going on inside that compound. So we're interested in knowing more. He is the author of Cross Swords, Pakistan, Its Army, and the Wars Within. So we'll continue taking some of your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Please don't give us any conspiracy theories about, you know, the fact that they didn't kill him and he was really killed in 2000. You know, it's just a lot of hooey at this point. So let's just hear reasoned comments, okay? Roxanne in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi. I was just calling. My concern is more about our reaction to the killing of bin Laden, not taking anything away at all from the people who have been hurt by the actions of this man. But I'm just wondering if our celebrating of a killing of a human being is actually the best thing to do. We've celebrated wars ending. I don't think this really is a similar thing. And we're having parties and celebrating that a person, a human being's life is gone. I understand he did, you know, he did things that really probably were justified in his killing, but it's the celebration thing that makes me taken aback, actually.
Yeah. I guess some commentators have been talking about this as, you know, his was an act of war against us, and in an act of war against him, this is what you get. You get death in war. But we've had several comments from listeners that bin Laden's capture was necessary. His death was not necessary. So there are some people who are concerned. I don't know if he could have been taken alive, considering what I've heard about the military operation.
It's not necessarily. I'm not going to second guess whether or not he could be taken alive. But it's the fact that we as people are celebrating. Mm-hmm. Having parties, celebrating all across the nation that this person died.
Okay, we'll hear what other listeners have to say about your comments. Thank you very much. Thanks very much. John in Milwaukee is next. Hi, John.
Hi. I just had a little comment to make. You know, it took 10 years to capture this murderer, and the reason it did is because President Bush spent 8 years looking for weapons of mass destruction. That's all I had to say.
Can you just repeat the last sentence?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. We're changing guests here. We have five things going on at the same time.
Maybe I didn't talk into the phone.
You're fine. It's not you. It's me.
Okay. The comment I had to make is, you know, it took 10 years to finally capture Osama bin Laden. And the reason it took as long as it did, because President Bush spent the last 8 years looking for weapons of mass destruction. That's all I had to say.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And there have been complaints that the war in Iraq was a distraction. And who knows? I mean, playing what if? What if we had just concentrated on Afghanistan? I don't know. We have a change in guests right now. Our other guest was in an emergency meeting and will not be able to join us. And so we are speaking with Caroline Wadhams, who's a senior fellow at American Progress, who focuses on Afghanistan, Pakistan, terrorism issues, and U.S. national security. She served as a legislative assistant on foreign policy issues for Senator Russ Feingold, which is interesting. And she has worked at the Council on Foreign Relations as assistant director for the meetings program, and in New York as a research associate for national security issues. Caroline, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So how momentous is this news? I'm interested in what people were thinking, particularly those who know a lot about this part of the world, once the president broke the news last night.
This is a huge deal. I mean, this is just this is a major accomplishment for the U.S. And I don't I think that we should all be very, very happy about that Osama bin Laden was finally found. And you know, in terms of the, I don't think that in terms of the operations of Al Qaeda Central, that this is a significant change. I think more than anything, this is symbolism. This is a symbolic victory, and it's a morale booster for the U.S. And it's clearly it hurts the morale of those who supported Al Qaeda and Osama bin Laden in particular.
Mm-hmm. And what about the change, if any, it may precipitate in our war in Afghanistan? Do you think that, that there will be any change as a result of this, or not? Do we rethink our strategy?
I see big changes in terms of the politics around it, but I don't see big changes in terms of Obama's approach. Because I think one of the things that Obama's strategy has had going for it for the past couple of years in Afghanistan is that no one's really been paying attention to it. And there has not been, there's increasing opposition to the war in Afghanistan from Americans, but no one's really been paying attention, and they haven't been calling their members of Congress, they haven't been putting political pressure on members of Congress to really stand up on this issue. I think what this might do is change that a little bit. More people are now paying attention. And because the Obama administration has always put the Afghanistan war in the frame of Al Qaeda, I think there is a it's easy to say, well, you know, if you're an American, that, you know, mission has been accomplished. We got Osama bin Laden, who carried out the terrorist attacks of September 11th. So why do we need to stay in Afghanistan? Now, I think there are larger strategic interests at stake in Afghanistan than Al Qaeda, and I think Al Qaeda has been actually a pretty minor player in Afghanistan over the past couple of years. But I think politically, domestically, there's going to be sort of a bigger push for getting out of Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, attention is shifting now to Pakistan with this news because the president carefully worded how much help and how little help the Pakistani government gave us in that we did this. He was very explicit about the fact that this was a U.S. military operation. Do we need to find out a whole lot more about other terrorist organizations along the border and what kind of deals the Pakistani government has cut with them to keep them that country secure?
The fact that its location, where Osama bin Laden's compound was, in a military town,
right,
and just
right.
the infrastructure of the compound in terms of it was bigger than most houses in the area. It was, you know, people think it was sort of a $1 million structure. It is so damning for the Pakistanis. There has been widespread concern about Pakistani complicity with terrorist groups and Al-Qaeda for a long time, and especially with the Afghan Taliban. But this clearly, I mean, it is just, it's so mind-boggling. And I think that, yes, it raises a lot of questions. I can't, you know, at this point, I want more information about who bought the land that this compound
right.
was on,
yeah.
who knew about it. I mean, because it's hard for me to imagine that the senior military leaders or the senior civilian leaders knew about this. I can't go that far in my thinking, but it definitely makes me think that a lot more people knew about it than I had knew about where he was than I had imagined.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls. Bonnie in Madison is our next caller. Hi, Bonnie.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. I had two quick points, and I make the second one first based on what the guest just said. You had a guest on from the New York Times about a year ago who said India was a key to this, and I was wondering maybe if Pakistan wasn't threatening India with having Al-Qaeda in its within its borders over the Kashmir question and, you know, other relations with India. And then my second comment was there was a article in the New York Times published June 13th, 2010, just a year ago, that says U.S. identifies vast mineral riches in Afghanistan. When I saw that, I thought, oh, boy, we're going to be there a long time. So I wondered if the guests might comment on those two points.
Caroline.
Sure. I mean, yeah, the Al-Qaeda, the fact that Al-Qaeda was there is a threat to India, and it's a threat to a lot of countries, including us. But it's not even just, it doesn't even just stop at Al-Qaeda. I mean, they've got a number of groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba, which is believed to have conducted the Mumbai attacks in India, harbored within their borders. There are a number of different terrorist groups that are believed to operate there. And the Pakistanis have gone after some groups, and there's been concern that they have not gone after another, they have not done, they haven't sufficiently gone after these groups. And India has been concerned about this for years, as have we. And I think there is interesting, there was a statement by an Indian official saying, you know, basically condemning, exasperated, and again, you know, just concerned that he was Osama bin Laden was found where he was found in Pakistan, and that it was, you know, the Pakistanis played a passive role in this these operations. They did not appear to have played an active role. Now they, you know, supposedly they were. They did provide at least some provided intelligence to that led to this, but again, we don't know the extent of it. I mean, I think we have to be clear that the Pakistanis, it's not a monolith. There are different elements within that country, some of whom are working with us and want to work with us and want to go after these groups, and others who do not. But their existential fears about India are driving a lot of their continued support for different militant groups within their borders. In terms of the second question on the minerals, I mean, my sense is that the Obama administration does want to get out and, you know, has this timeline that we're going to totally hand over combat operations by 2014. The withdrawal is supposed to begin in July. We'll see what happens. I think there's a real internal debate within the administration about how significant that withdrawal will be. I think that they want to withdraw. They want to do it in a way where it doesn't ignite a larger conflict. I think the minerals, you know, it's hard to know what, you know, exactly what all the what that means, but there's a hope that Afghanistan will eventually be able to pay for its own development, its own the building of its own state. But that's obviously going to be a decade long process.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call, Bonnie. We go next to Chuck in on the road. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go right ahead, sir.
Well, I'd really like to applaud SEAL Team 6 for their success on this mission. I'd like to buy them all a beer in the future if that ever became possible. I'm curious, and I'm awaiting details in the coming days. I'm curious how the Obama administration is going to continue to react to any statements of denial coming from the Pakistani government regarding bin Laden's location. I believe they knew where he was the whole time. Any sane person has to believe that.
Caroline.
Yeah, I mean, again, the caller is right. It's really it's very disturbing, and it looks like there was complicity. Again, we just don't know how extensive it is. I think it's what I said before. There are a lot of different factions within Pakistan, some of whom are working with us, some of whom are definitely working against us, and we need to find out more information. The issue is whether, you know, what are the if you decide that everybody was complicit, which I don't think everybody in Pakistan was. I don't think the senior civilian leadership was. But if you decide that enough people were complicit, I mean, then what's the implication? Do you totally cut off Pakistan, you know, abandon it, call it a pariah state, and stop working with it altogether? That also could have dangerous repercussions. So we have to be careful about how we manage this. I mean, it's a country of 180 million people. It has nukes. You know, it sits in a crucial country in the South Asia region, bordering up against China. I mean, we have to be very, very, I think, cautious about how we deal with this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are so many levels of things that have been happening there lately, too. We also had the arrest of the CIA contractor in Pakistan, and that didn't make the U.S. look very good. But we got the U.S. drone strikes against northwest Pakistan. The Pakistani foreign ministry is saying, this is a Voice of America report today, that Pakistan has played a significant role in efforts to fight terrorism and that its soil will not be used in terrorist attacks against any country. And then they warned, the Pakistani Taliban warning, that there will be future revenge attacks against the Pakistani and U.S. governments in revenge for bin Laden's death. So
yeah,
what's the truth in any of that?
I mean, the truth is it's probably a mix of things. I mean, the Pakistanis, while they say publicly that they don't support the drone strikes, all evidence, points to the fact that they actually have been supporting with the targeting of those drone strikes. They have, the Obama administration believes that they have increased their cooperation with us in going after these groups. And the drone strikes under Obama have significantly increased under Obama. There is believed to be help from the Pakistanis in doing that. And so we can't just, we shouldn't just believe that they don't do anything. And they've also lost a lot of troops from terrorist attacks in Pakistan. They have increased military operations against militant groups within their borders, and they have over the past couple of years. They've taken a lot of loss of lives of their troops in those operations. They've gone into South Waziristan. They've gone into the federally administered tribal areas where these groups operate. But it is believed that they selectively go after groups. They go after some, they don't go after others. And it's been especially a problem with the Afghan Taliban insurgents, who the U.S. has been rightly very upset that they have not gone aggressively enough after those groups. But it's a more nuanced picture than just these guys are against, the Pakistanis are against us, they support terrorist groups. There's different groups, different factions within Pakistan.
More phone calls in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest this part of the show is Caroline Wadhams. She is senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, focusing on Afghanistan, Pakistan, terrorism issues, and also U.S. national security. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls now for Caroline. Dave in Augusta. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Dave.
I think it's a great day for America. I'm really, really proud of the way our servicemen went into a spot like that, so isolated, and completed their mission with no casualties on our part. It's a shame that I think maybe a few people got killed on the other side, but, the needs of many outweigh the needs of a few. My question for your guest is, what will history compare bin Laden to Adolf Hitler? I mean, Hitler was probably killed more people, but I compare the two in terms of ruthless killings and having a mean outlook on the world.
Caroline.
Yeah, I agree with the caller. This is a great day for America. I think it's very difficult to compare to Adolf Hitler because he was, he was in charge of a country and a military, and the extent, the 6 million Jews that he killed and more is at a different scale. But I think Osama bin Laden was clearly a murderer, a brutal murderer, killing innocents from all ethnicities, religious group, people around the world, and his mission was one of hatred and death. So I don't know who we compare him to is I guess the bottom line, but clearly it's a victory for the United States, and I think for the world that he was found.
Thank you, Dave. Roger in Milwaukee. Hi.
Morning. Well, of course we can give accolades, and they're well deserved. And that's a great day for America. But that's really, we've heard that, and we know that. We also know that we can't trust Afghanistan's leadership anymore. That's not a big deal. The problem is that nobody has actually looked at that. Unfortunately, Obama has succeeded in what he said he would do, and he always said, what I'm going to do is bankrupt America. And here we have a deficit based on all of our military spending because we're in Iraq, we're in Iran, and we're in Afghanistan. Well, we're not in Iran yet, but everybody's inkling that way. And, I mean, we have a deficit that we can't digest. We give our money to the rest of the world, and I'm so glad the guy's gone. But he didn't succeed what he said he was going to do, and that was what it was. It wasn't a matter of killing people. It was, I'm going to take down America.
Carolyn.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's there are... Osama bin Laden was—he was really sort of a symbolic figure for us. But I don't think that his death ultimately changes a lot of the problems that we still have as a country or the threats that we face. Clearly, we have—I mean, I do believe that we are over-invested in Afghanistan, that we need to recalibrate sort of our priorities, our resources to the real risks that lie out there for our country. And I think what the Obama administration is trying to do is basically finish in a responsible way the legacy wars that were created under the Bush administration. Now, the Obama administration always placed the threat of Afghanistan in terms of this Al-Qaeda threat. I always have thought that that's been a little bit of a misdiagnosis of what has been the real issue in Afghanistan. I think that there are larger security interests at stake in Afghanistan that have more to do with the region, regional stability, than they do with Al-Qaeda. And I think the challenge is to withdraw from Afghanistan in a way where it doesn't ignite a larger conflict that is destabilizing to the region, including Pakistan, as well as, and does justice to the investments that we've made there. But it's a, you know, I do think that we have to sort of change a lot of how we're approaching the world, and you know, I don't think this the overinvestment in Afghanistan. I'm not sure the Osama bin Laden killing actually changes a lot of that.
Thank you, Roger. David in DeForest. Hi, David.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
I was under the impression that the U.S. military was not allowed to perform actions in Pakistan, and they've been pretty frustrated along the Pakistan-Afghanistan border, where they've had some good intelligence, but the Pakistanis wouldn't allow them to actually be on the ground and do operations. How were they able to actually get a SEAL team into a military city and do this with Pakistan, you know, they with their cooperation, or how did they get into there?
I mean, we have actually, even though the Pakistanis don't like to admit it, we have had some trainers on the ground in Pakistan. But you're right, we've been severely restricted in what we've been able to do in Pakistan. But we have done the drone strikes the Obama administration dramatically escalated those over the past couple of years. Now they don't talk about it. The Pakistanis won't talk about that publicly, but they, you know, it's believed that they are providing actually support and intelligence for the targeting. So there has been some support by the Pakistanis for our military action. In this case, my understanding is that we did it without their knowledge. We told them after the fact. We went in there, and it was purely a U.S. operation. And, you know, I don't exactly know how it all transpired, but I think we just unilaterally decided we saw the threat and we went after it. And you know, this is something that I don't know if people remember, but during the campaign, the presidential campaign, the Obama administration actually said that, you know, we would go into Pakistan and take out Osama bin Laden if we had to, even without their support. And it was very controversial, and it was pushed back a lot by Romney and others. I mean, that's exactly what they did.
And that's what happened.
Yep. I politically wonder what's going to transpire from all this.
Politically in this country or politically in the world? Or
Between us and Pakistan.
Oh.
I mean, this is really embarrassing for Pakistan. And I think it, again, just sort of takes off the veil, or whatever the expression is. It removes the veil from, again, there some of the complicity that goes on. And you know, I think the relationship is deeply strained right now, and I think it's going to put increased pressure. But, you know, the question is whether you know, what the repercussion, even if you just walk away from Pakistan entirely, if that's the lesson you take, that also is incredibly dangerous. It is a nuclear-armed country, 180 million
right.
people, in, you know, in
this
South Asia.
Business of diplomacy is not easy. Caroline, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Caroline Wadhams, senior fellow at the American Progress, with a focus on Afghanistan, Pakistan, terrorism issues, and U.S. national security. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Chrissy Pease for producing our 2 hours of coverage today. Reaction to the major news, Osama bin Laden is dead. We'll have more shows talking about this issue. Ben Marin's this afternoon, and I'm sure Talk of the Nation as well, plus updates on the news. Thanks for listening.